Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we are strapping in for one of the most high-pressure, high-stakes environments imaginable. We're talking about the trauma bay, the operating room, the world of the acute care surgeon. We're going to be dissecting some advanced material that was presented at the Pol di Clinico A. Gemelli, looking right at that collision point between cutting-edge artificial intelligence and, well, trauma medicine. And our mission today is not theoretical at all. We want to go beyond the glossy slides and really quickly grasp three concrete things. First, where is AI actually effective right now in trauma care? Second, what are the fundamental limitations, the sources of what the material calls friction, that prevent AI from just taking over the really high-stakes work? And third, what are the hard, non-negotiable red lines that separate human and machine responsibility when life is hanging in the balance?
And that context, it's absolutely everything. Acute care is just fundamentally different from, you know, scheduled elective medicine. It demands immediate, often irreversible decision-making. And it does that under these severe, just unavoidable constraints. When we talk about a trauma scenario, you're looking at scarce staff, unreliable power, severely limited bandwidth, and so critically, very little time. I mean, think about it. If an AI system can't function flawlessly when a generator is kicking in, or if the Wi-Fi gets spotty, then it's basically useless. This harsh, real-world environment, it dictates every single design decision an engineer has to make.
Okay, let's unpack that scarcity right away, because that leads us straight to this idea of AI friction. I mean, just imagine the frustration of a surgeon relying on a digital tool that suddenly just goes dark. So what are the engineering realities? What dictates that this AI has to be, for lack of a better term, battlefield ready?
Well, the first reality is connectivity. These systems just cannot rely on a pristine, always-on hospital network. It's not realistic. They have to be designed for, you know, offline or edge use. That means the processing has to happen locally on the device itself, not somewhere up in the cloud. But even the best local device can fail. Which brings us to the second crucial design principle: graceful degradation. Think of it like a smartphone battery hitting 1%.
Right, it doesn't just crash.
Exactly. It starts shutting down non-essential apps, but it keeps the core functions, like calling emergency services, running. So if the AI loses power or connectivity, it needs to fail slowly or, you know, maintain its core life-saving functions instead of just crashing and taking away critical support.
I love that analogy. It has to prioritize survival. And look, if the machine itself is stressed, the human user is under even more stress.
Yeah.
How does that affect the user interface?
Oh, massively. Because the clinicians are operating under peak cognitive load, high stress. Every single interaction with the AI has to be minimized. We're talking about optimizing for what we call zero-click defaults.
Meaning no time to fiddle with settings.
None. No surgeon has time to scroll through menus or type out a detailed 5-sentence prompt or navigate some complex visualization during a trauma admission. The AI has to anticipate the need, present a minimal intervention, and just get out of the way.
That makes perfect sense. So given these really intense limitations, this friction, where is AI actually pulling its weight today? What are the low-risk, high-yield tasks that can survive this strict filter?
We're seeing some immediate wins in tasks that reduce that administrative and cognitive load, but crucially, they don't involve making the final clinical call. The primary areas are fast textual synthesis. So taking mountains of incoming lab results and vital sign trends and just summarizing them into a few key bullet points. Also, automating checks. AI is great at verifying guidelines and protocols against real-time patient data. You know, are we meeting the sepsis bundle checklist? Are the drug doses right for this patient's weight?
So it's a safety net?
A huge one. And finally, automating those critical handover notes between shifts or transfers. It takes all this high-density information and gives a clean, automated summary for the next team. These are all verification and admin wins that buy the surgeon precious seconds.
That's a measurable benefit. Okay, but here's where it gets really interesting for me. If it's so good at synthesizing clean existing data, where does it still struggle in a place like the trauma bay?
It struggles wherever the input data is messy, noisy, or just plain incomplete. That means high-stakes imaging analysis, especially when the image quality is compromised out in the field. It also struggles to navigate noisy physical environments. I mean, just picture it. Alarms, shouting, constant movement in the trauma bay. All of that can confuse auditory or visual inputs for an AI.
And then you have the big inherent AI problems.
Right. And then there are the inherent issues of, well, large language models. The two major flaws are ensuring data provenance, like where did this recommendation actually come from? And of course, managing the risk of model hallucinations.
Which is a whole different level of danger here.
Oh, absolutely. In critical care, a hallucination isn't just generating a fake historical quote. It's recommending the wrong procedure or the wrong medication. It's lethal.
That is a terrifying thought.
Yeah.
The risk of a lethal hallucination. Okay, so let's shift gears from the technical limits to the professional boundaries. The source material laid out three really nuanced claims about the relationship between the surgeon and the machine. Let's start with the first one, which is all about trust.
Okay, so the first claim acknowledges that AI often outperforms human clinicians on average, especially with these documentation-driven cases where it's all about pattern matching. You feed it thousands of standardized records, it will spot patterns faster than a person.
Okay, but there's a huge but coming, I assume.
A huge one. However, the crucial nuance is that the clinician should never blindly trust that output. Best practice demands that these AI tools have to provide mechanisms for scrutiny. They have to offer uncertainty surfacing, basically, showing how confident the AI is in its recommendation.
So it's not just a black box.
It can't be. It also has to provide clear citations and robust why not reasoning before any action is taken.
Why not reasoning? So if the AI says, I think the patient has condition A, it also needs to explain, and I ruled out condition B because X, Y, and Z were missing.
Precisely.
But if the AI is demonstrably better at the pattern recognition, why not just trust it and save those extra seconds? Why is the why not so important?
Because the surgeon's job isn't to diagnose the average case, it's to manage the outlier. The edge case the AI has never seen before. If you trust the AI blindly and it's wrong, you can't course correct quickly because you don't understand its logic. Hmm. The why not turns the AI from an opaque oracle into a transparent advisor, an advisor whose logic you can interrogate and, you know, potentially reject when the clinical picture demands it.
That moves us perfectly into the second claim, which is, I think it's the most crucial one. It defines the human role. The argument is that empathy alone is a moat. Relational accountability is. This really challenges that common idea that doctors are safe because a machine can't hold a patient's hand.
That's right. And while empathy is obviously vital, the functional, the legal, the operational difference, it's accountability. The human advantage isn't just about comforting the patient. It's about legally and professionally owning the decision. The surgeon retains ownership of the most critical elements, defining the thresholds for intervention. You know, when do we stop waiting and start operating and making those big escalation decisions? And crucially, if something goes wrong, the surgeon is the one who has to provide the explanation, the accountability to the patient's family, to the other teams, to the review boards. An AI can process data, but it can never be legally or ethically accountable for an irreversible decision. That liability, that's the human moat.
So the moat isn't a soft skill, it's a hard responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm hearing you right, the focus is less on whether the AI is smart and more on whether the human can still articulate and defend the decision that was made, even if an AI influenced it.
You've got it. It shifts the entire focus away from trying to make the AI perfect and towards making the entire workflow safer and more explainable.
And that transition leads us to the third claim, which is maybe the most practical one for hospitals and health systems. Retrain less, redesign more. What does that mean in terms of actually implementing this?
This is a huge realization. We shouldn't be focused on taking these highly specialized surgeons and forcing them into some intensive retraining program to become, I don't know, prompt engineers or data scientists.
That's a total waste of their expertise.
It's inefficient and it distracts them from what they do best. Instead, the focus should be on redesigning the overall workflow, the handoffs, to incorporate AI tools seamlessly as supportive functions. Think about how we integrated GPS into driving. We didn't send all the drivers back to school to learn satellite engineering. We just redesigned the dashboard to display the info simply. The AI serves as a tireless summarizer, a continuous sentinel checking for risks, or a scribe capturing every detail. It's not trying to be an autonomous diagnostician.
Okay, let's get down to brass tacks then. Deployment. We have this clear roadmap separating what can be deployed now versus what needs to be prototyped next. So what's in that immediate deploy now category? The stuff that's low risk and high yield enough to work today.
The deploy now list is heavily focused on safety and efficiency checks, mostly at the administrative layer. So things like order set sanity checks, it automatically screens for drug interactions, for duplications or incorrect doses based on patient specifics. Also, auto summaries for patient transfers. Imagine moving a patient from the OR to the ICU. The AI just immediately generates that concise, necessary transfer document.
That saves a ton of time.
A ton. And crucially, integrating mandatory protocol checklists, like for sepsis bundles or damage control surgery protocols. But, and this is key, only with an explicit human override function displayed prominently. The AI checks the box, but the surgeon has to actively sign off on it.
That explicit override is the safety net.
Okay.
So what's on the horizon in the prototype next category? Things that are more intertwined with the high-stakes decisions.
The future stuff gets much deeper into the decision cycle. We're talking about a triage copilot. It wouldn't just rank patients. It would suggest a priority level, provide a clear rationale for that priority, and proactively ask for specific missing data points needed for the next step.
So it's anticipating the next move.
Exactly. We're also looking at an imaging bridge. This is a tool that would help create structured prompts for radiologists, making sure critical details aren't missed, and it links the rationale for ordering a scan directly to the bedside actions. It connects the why of the scan to the what's of the procedure.
This all raises the biggest question. Where do we draw the line? If an AI can suggest priority, what are the absolute non-negotiable red lines that define the limits of autonomous systems in critical care?
The limits are very clear and totally uncompromising. First, absolutely no autonomous medication changes or procedure initiation. A machine cannot give a drug or start a procedure without a human command, period. Second, no image-only diagnoses without immediate, explicit human verification. Machine can flag an image, it can say, look here, but a human has to confirm the finding.
And the third.
And this links back to accountability. No opaque or unexplained recommendations in critical care. If a surgeon cannot explain the recommendation to a patient or another doctor, it's not actionable. Opaque AI means zero trust in the trauma bay.
Okay, let's make this real. Let's use that example zero from the presentation to show this hybrid approach. So you have a polytrauma patient, they're unstable, the fast exam, that quick ultrasound check is equivocal, and a full CT scan is still pending. Time is the enemy.
In that split second, the AI provides its output. It gives a suggested priority, the rationale saying something like, based on vital sign trends and mechanism of injury. And it requests specific missing data, like confirm baseline INR. But the clinician's role here is everything. They have to actively accept or reject parts of that output. They might accept the priority, but reject the rationale based on something new they just found. And they have to be ready to call out the system's blind spots.
And this whole process of active rejection and verification, it really demands two technical features above all else, right? An uncertainty display and that offline first capability.
Absolutely. The uncertainty display tells the surgeon, hey, I'm 95% sure about the priority, but only 60% sure about the rationale, which lets the surgeon calibrate their trust in real time. And the offline capability ensures that even if the network fails during the most critical minute of that patient's life, the support structure doesn't just vanish.
So if success isn't just about simple diagnostic accuracy in a lab somewhere, how do we measure effectiveness in this chaotic high-stakes world? What are the metrics that truly matter beyond just, was the AI right?
Success has to be measured across three pillars: safety, flow, and equity. For safety, we go way beyond simple accuracy. We look at alert performance, measured by its positive predictive value, or PPV. How often is the alert actually right, and its negative predictive value? And, crucially, we have to measure the frequency of override rates. How often are surgeons rejecting the AI's advice? A high override rate means the AI is distracting. A zero rate might mean they're over-trusting it. We also measure its ability to capture those near misses that human fatigue might have caused.
Okay, and what about the tangible efficiency metrics, the ones under the banner of flow? This is where the time savings really come in.
Flow is all about optimizing the entire care pathway. So we measure critical timing metrics like time to first knife, the time from patient arrival to the start of a life-saving procedure. We also track the door to CT report delta.
The time from walking in the door to getting that final report.
Exactly. And finally, the total documentation time saved. If the AI doesn't speed up the team, letting them spend more time on actual patient care, then its value proposition just collapses.
And finally, that third pillar, equity. In a field that has to operate in less than ideal settings, a rural hospital, a field clinic, what does equity even mean for an AI system?
Equity is all about performance consistency. Does the tool work just as well if the data is entered in English or Spanish or another language? Does it perform the same in a high-tech center versus a remote one? Given the extreme constraints we started with, the single most critical metric here is the offline uptime percentage, a tool that only works perfectly in the best-connected trauma center in the world. Well, that's not an equitable tool. It just makes existing disparities worse.
This entire framework really seems to tie together into this profound shift in what it means to be a surgeon. They're moving away from being the sole source of data and calculation and more towards being the ultimate arbiter of risk and liability.
Exactly. The new surgeon role, it really relies on three core competencies under pressure, which kind of synthesizes everything we've covered. The first is thresholds, deciding when to act, when to wait, when the risk of waiting outweighs the risk of operating. The second is trade-offs, deciding what specific risk to accept when you have incomplete information. And the third is trust, deciding how to explain that action and the associated risk to everyone involved. And that right there is the essence of relational accountability.
So what does this all mean for you, our listener? The core takeaway here is that AI is successfully transforming the documentation, verification, and guidance layers of acute care. It's acting as this crucial sentinel against human error and information overload. But when it comes down to those high-stakes, irreversible decisions when you have to decide to cut, that remains fundamentally human. It rests entirely on that commitment to accountability.
And that framework, it raises a fascinating final thought for you to consider. Given the absolute insistence in this field on offline-first design, on graceful degradation and performance equity across all these different settings, what implications does this trauma-focused AI design philosophy, a philosophy born from brutal necessity, have for the development of AI tools in other critical, resource-limited, non-medical fields? Think about disaster relief logistics, remote infrastructure maintenance, or environmental monitoring in regions without stable networks. They all share the same constraints. And maybe, just maybe, they can learn from the surgeon's absolute need for resilience.